A moment this morning when we're grateful to be broadcasting in radio. If we could show you the video of the death of 13-year-old Hamza Ali al-Khatib in Syria, who it is claimed was brutally tortured and killed during protests and by the regime of Bashar Assad, if we could show you those pictures, the outrage would be instantaneous. But what does it mean politically inside of Syria? We just spoke live with Razan Zaituna, who's a human rights lawyer in Damascus, saying it has accelerated the rate of protests, and particularly of young people who are going into the streets to protest the outrageous death of this 13-year-old last week. To try to get some context here, we're going to Ian Black once again, Middle East editor for The Guardian. He joins us now from London. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, John.
Ian, you know, it's hard for me to put these pictures, first of all, which are horribly shocking, of this poor little 13-year-old boy in Syria in context with the media's, I think, almost simplistic need sometimes for a snapshot to become a symbol of now Syria is going to turn into Tahrir Square. And we know that's not the case. What's going on here, do you think?
I think what we have here is a terrible case. The pictures are indeed horrific of a little boy who's been killed, evidently, and suffered cruelly. And it's galvanized opinion, certainly in Syria, in a sense that has fueled the outrage, if you like, about what's been going on for the last couple of months, with a sort of seesaw of half-hearted, not very sincere attempts at political reform, gestures, appeasement from the government, with extraordinary brutality against ordinary Syrians, of which this case is the most vivid and shocking and widely diffused example we've seen yet. So it has sort of captured a moment, and in the modern way, in the age of Facebook and mass communications, lots and lots of people have seen it, both inside Syria and outside. So this kid, this child, has taken on a sort of iconic, symbolic significance that stands for many other largely unknown victims of the repression in Syria.
One more question, Ian. We're talking about the death of 13-year-old Hamza Ali al-Khatib, whose pictures have, as Ian said, become a symbol, but maybe it's more than a symbol. Ian, I hear you choosing your words very carefully, but I suspect you are coming close to saying this may be a tipping point in Syria.
Well, you know, it's still very hard to know. What's happening in Syria is happening without the intense scrutiny of the international media. The Syrians have really blocked off almost all access to foreign media, apart from an occasional foray in for a sort of set-up interview with a very careful government spokesman. There's been no ability to check things independently. We've heard from brave Syrian human rights activists, people who've spoken out, who are taking the risk of being in contact with the foreign media, like the previous interviewee. We don't know whether it's a tipping point. What's different in Syria is that, as far as we can tell, there still haven't been the large masses of people involved in protests that we saw most memorably in the Egyptian case. And there's a substantial body of opinion in Syria that we hear amplified through the government-controlled media that says, look, you know, these are people with a sinister agenda. They're armed gangs. They're not peaceful protesters. Now, outside, many people may not be convinced by that, and it's not a very convincing case. But it seems to be true that in Syria there are still a substantial body of people who are loyal to the regime, and certainly prepared to carry out repression on its behalf.
Ian Black, Middle East editor for The Guardian, thanks so much once again. As we attempt to put in context the death of this 13-year-old boy, let's put that directly to Marina Ottaway, director of the Middle East program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Marina, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What is the chance that, and I put this directly to Razan Zaituna, who was talking with us live from Damascus, what is the chance that the death of this little boy convinces as many people to stay home as it does to go into the street, gives them more of a sense of fear rather than more of a sense of empowerment?
Well, it's very difficult to know. I think the most important thing to keep in mind is there is some strategic thinking behind the demonstrations at this point. In other words, yes, people are outraged. They are coming out in the streets. They are outraged. But there is also some leadership, and there is also a decision, apparently, not to organize the mass, not to go out all at once for the massive demonstrations, but to rather have a different tactic of unrelenting small groups popping up here and there to go out at night rather than during the daytime, so that it's less likely that the police will be able to shoot massive numbers of people. So it is quite possible that despite the outrage, the organizers will decide that the trying to organize at Tahrir Square would be too dangerous because the government can respond just with massive shooting and then it turns into Tiananmen Square. So that I'm not sure that no matter what the level of outrage is, this is the time we are going to see the big crowds and the hundreds of thousands of people in the streets.
We're speaking with Marina Ottaway, director of the Middle East program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Marina, this 13-year-old boy who was brutalized, possibly tortured before he was killed, at what point does somebody like that become a symbol that lasts, where the outrage isn't just what we see in, may say, at other funerals in other countries, where people march for a few days and then it passes on to another outrage? At what point does he become the street vendor in Tunisia and actually motivate a people to rise?
Well, you know, that's a very good question to which nobody has an answer. I mean, one thing that we have learned in all these uprisings in all Arab countries is that it is easy to know when the conditions exist when a massive uprising might take place. What you never can tell is exactly what is going to trigger it. So this certainly has the potential, but that does not mean that it is going to happen, particularly if the leadership or whoever is trying to coordinate these events decides that it's not a good idea to have a large concentration of people in one place.
Indeed.
Because the government might just shoot at the crowds.
Well, Marina Ottaway, thanks so much for that. You know, this reminds me of 1989 in Romania, where so many people thought that the Romanian Revolution would be like the Prague Spring, and it turned out to be much more brutal, much more like a coup d'etat. Marina Ottaway is director of the Middle East program at the Carnegie Endowment, excuse me, for International Peace. Thanks so much. We will leave you now with the sound of that funeral, 13-year-old boy, who may or may not be a symbol of future and accelerated anger in the nation of Syria.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.